So we're still doing Sanhedrin out here.
Right, Sanhedrin.
We're on Daf Yud Dalet on the Beis. We're about to turn to Tesvav and Aleph, but we're not yet ready for that. So let's look at the Mishnah again, back on Daf Beis and Aleph, so that we know what we're talking about here on Daf Yud Dalet on the Beis and Tesvav and Aleph. So you take a look at the wide lines in the Mishnah on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, and you count down three lines. So we have Neter Vayi Masa Sheni. I'm going to skip a few words here, and then we'll clarify that. Bishlosha. So we need a kind of a Bezdin. I called it a tribunal. The Gemara explains that when a person does Pidyon, which he can do either on Neter Vayi in the fourth year, the produce of the tree, the fruits on the tree, or in the case of Asa Sheni, which are the 10% of the grains of the first, second, fourth, and fifth year of the Shemitah cycle, those are all subject to Pidyon. So he doesn't have to take them, this 10% of his fruits, of his produce, all the way to Yerushalayim. He can instead exchange the Kedusha, transferring it over to the most, but he has to know exactly what the value of his fruits are, because he cannot do a pidyon on money that's less than the value of the fruit. So how do we know the value of the fruit? So you and I would have said, well, go into the local store, you know, local fruit store, and figure out what they charge for a bushel of apples. But no, the Mishnah says that we need a tribunal of Shlosha in order to determine, in order to assess the exact value of the fruits. Now let's go back to the three words that we skipped. She'ein domav yiduin. Because the exact value of the fruits is not clear, is not known. So the Gemara asks, what does that mean? Ein domav yiduin. Just ask your local fruit seller, vendor. You know, why do you tell me that you needed to be appraised by three experts? And the Gemara answers, because we're talking about fruits that have begun to rot. They're in the process of spoilage, and therefore it's not crystal clear what their value are. So he has to do a pidyon on exactly their value, and he doesn't know, he cannot determine exactly their value. You know, some people will pay a lot of money, and they'll only decrease the value, devaluate the payers by a little because of the spoilage, and in other cases, well, maybe they're less desperate, you know, they're more picky about it. You know, there's so many different variables that might kick in, the different types of the times of the year, or whether the shortage, and how desperate he is, and there's so many different variables. So Rashi says that in such a case we need lekuchos. Who are these three members of this tribunal? They're not just rabbis with long beards that took smicha, that's not enough. That would not be relevant. What we need is experts. Rashi says that these lekuchos are in the buying and selling business, and very often they have to sell damaged produce. You know, we call it here in Israel sug bet. You know, these are like used clothes that you sell, obviously at a slash price, secondhand. And these experts who are always buying and selling, they'll tell you exactly what its value is here locally, given the amount of spoilage that has taken place. Tosis, on the other hand, offers a different shot. He says that the experts here are not experts, because if that be the case, the Gemara should have used the word Bekiyim, and the Gemara doesn't use the word Bekiyim. It used the word Lekuchos. Lekuchos are buyers. And Tosra says that we invite three people into a room and we put the fruits on the table and we say to them, well, how much would you be willing to pay? So one of these three people called Ruven, he gets up and he says, well, I'll be willing to pay 10. Shimon is a little bit more desperate or less finicky and he says, no, I'll pay 11. And Levi gets up and he says, well, I'll pay 12. So we put the gravel down. We say, you know, going once, going twice. The Eshtemol, the Tzvetemol, the Tevetemol, Zachalo. You know, so Levi is willing to pay the highest price. And the reason we're doing this is because we want to make sure that in Hegdesh they'll get the best deal possible. The Gemara has a whole discussion about who these three people are. Do they belong to one outfit? You know, they're all partners in one geshef. Well, these three people represent three different companies, three different entities. Each one has his own experience and brings to the table his own expertise. And the Gemara says there might be enough gemina, not only in the case of partners, if you have three people who are experts, but they all are partners in the same business, but what happens in the case of a husband and a wife? In fact, the Gemara has a case of a husband and two wives. Can they form a tribunal, just the three of them? So first the Gemara thinks that there's a brisa that clearly indicates that such a thing is valid. But then the Gemara says, no, that brisa is referring to a case where each of these wives was an expert on her own. You know, she was a businesswoman and she has such clever acumen in business that she set up her own business. So it wasn't one partnership. But it could be that in one partnership that would not be enough to set up this tribunal, as we called it, for Shuma meaning for appraising the value of the fruits. Then the Mishnah goes on to say, Hekdeshos Bishlosha. Now what that means is that if a person was Magdish, an object, and he says, Arei Zela Hekdesh, which means that's called Kedushas Damim, otherwise known as Kedushas Berek Habayis, which is a gift to Hekdesh. And we have a principle that states that Ami Rosal Gavah Kimasi Rosal Hedge, meaning the very declaration that this is for Hegdesh, that itself bequeaths to Hegdesh as a bailus, an ownership. We don't need a Maisa Kinyan. So wherever this object is, it now belongs to Hegdesh. And now he has rights, the one who has Magdish this object, like this table, for example, to be Poda the Hegdesh. He could say to Hegdesh, you know, I want my table back. I'll give you its equivalent in value, in currency. So once again, the Mishnah says we have to have a bezdin of three, some sort of supervisory panel that's made up of three experts, and they will decide what this object is worth on the market. And we'll soon see that the Gemara is going to derive this from psukim. In the case of Netter of Ayamaisa Sheni, the Gemara doesn't have any psukim. And that perhaps is based on the fact that with Netter of Ayamaisa, the Torah calls it Kodesh Ilulim Hashem, it has the status of Hegdesh. But in the case of Hegdesh, we have actually a biblical source for this requirement of three. And then the Mishnah has the case of Ha'erchin, etc. So let's just stop at the word Erchin. Erchin means a person who declares Erki Olai, that I will give my value, my market value to Hegdesh. And the Torah sets up objective standards for how to determine a person's value. His age, gender, etc. And in such a case, in the case of Erchin, that would really be, in effect, another example of Hegdesh, because when he's being Magdish something, we have to know exactly the value. So too, if he says Erki Olai, we'll make a determination. But again, that determination doesn't require expertise, because the Torah itself gives us the guidelines. So what's the case that the Mishnah is addressing? And the Mishnah adds another word over here, Ha'erchin Ha'mitaltalin. Now, these two words are mutually exclusive. You can't have Erchin and at the same time have Mitaltalin. Mitaltalin means movable objects. Erchin means Erchi Olai, that I have to give my value to Hegdesh. Now, I am not Mitaltalin. I am Karka, which means Eved Hukash L'Karka, a human being, doesn't have the status of Mitaltalin. So what we're about to learn today is, what does this mean, Ha'erchin Ha'metaltalin? And the Gemara is going to, as we soon see, will offer three different interpretations of Erchin Ha'metaltalin. I'll just choose one, just for the sake of interpreting our Mishnah. So a man said Erki Olai, and then he wants to, instead of paying with cash, with currency, he wants to pay up his erchin, his vow, his pledge, with metaltalin. So now we have to know, and we have to assess the exact value of the metaltalin that he wants to offer. Does that really reflect the value of the erchi olai? So for that we need shlosha. We need three. We need a panel of three. Now, the reason why we need a panel of three and not a panel of ten, as we'll soon see in other cases, is dafka because we're talking about metaltalin. So he wants to pay up his erchin with movable objects. You know, he doesn't have enough cash in his bank, liquid assets, so he pays with an object. And since it's a movable object, it doesn't come under the Torah's requirement of 10. We're going to see that if a man is magdish his karka, his real estate, then we need a panel of 10, 9 of whom are Yisraelim, one of whom has to be a Kohen, one representative of Sheva Kuhuna, and they will evaluate his real estate. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Echad Mehem Kohen. Rabbi Yehuda says that to some extent, the law of Metaltalin reflects the similar law of Karkos. What does that mean? Well, in Karka, we're going to soon see that you need 10. In Metaltalin, we said you only need 3. But Rabbi Yehuda says there's one lowest common denominator to both Erech and Metaltalin and Karkos, and that is the requirement of at least one coin. Again, hopefully all this will become clear as we go through the Gemara. I just wanted to give you the Mishnah. In fact, if you take a look at Rashi, when Rashi says Ha'erchen HaMetaltalin, he says B'Gemara Mefarish. He doesn't even take a stab at it, because he realizes that there's no way that you can call something Erchen and in the same breath call it Metaltalin. Erchen means Erkeolai. That's a human being. That's not Metaltalin. On the next point, namely that one of them has to be a Kohen, Rashi has something to say, and he tells you Dechsiv Kohen b'parsha, that the name, the word Kohen appears in the parsha. So B'linader, as we go along, we're going to have to open up Vayikra Chav Zayin, and we're going to look for the word Kohen. And in the parsha, it speaks about Ke'ercha Koha Kohen. So you see that Erchin requires a Kohen. So Erechim Metaltalin, whatever it is, that fits under the category of Erechim, at least as far as this requirement of a Kohen. That's the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. There's another Rashi here that we skipped. Let's go back to Rashi Netar Avai. In Balachalo Alamos, right, Netar Avai gives him in the fourth year two options. Either he can take the fruits and schlep them to Yerushalayim and eat them there, or alternatively, if they're bulk, there's a whole bulk of fruits and he can't schlep them all to Yerushalayim, he's allowed to be machal them al mos, means he can take the kedusha, the sanctity of the fruits, and he can transfer them over to mos. V'chein Maisusheni has the identical status as Neter Avai, and in both cases you could be mechal them al mos, but how many mos? What currency? What value? The answer is you need this panel of 3. We'll call it experts according to Rashi, or according to Tosis, 3 bidders in an auction, in order to determine the exact value of the peiros and how much mos he has to give to be mechal el to effectuate this pidyon. Rashi says she'ein tveim yiduim. And here's Rashi quoting the sugi that we learned yesterday on Daf Yudalad Amud Beis. Kigon peiros v'her kivu, the fruits began to spoil. She'ein lem shar b'shuk, there's no official scale in the shuk that says, well, for this level of spoilage you pay this much, for that level you pay that. There's no objective standard, so we cannot clarify it, and therefore we need 3. Again, we'll call them experts for the time being, going with Rashi's pshat, to determine the value of these spoiled fruits. By Egdeshos, Habolif Dosom, the person was magdish something, now he wants to be poded, Tzarech Shloshal Ashuman, he needs 3 to evaluate and assess exactly how much this Hegdesh is worth. So having said that, we can start the sugya for today, and that's on Daf Yudalid Amud Beis. So we're looking for something called Hayekdeshos Bishlosha. And you'll see this in the wide lines on the bottom of Yudalim and Beis on line number 4. Excuse me, on line number 3. 3 lines down in the wide lines, Hayekdeshos Bishlosha, which is a quote from the Mishnah. So the Gemara says the following, Masnisin Deloki Haytana. I have a brisa, and I'm going to prove to you that our Mishnah, which maintains that in Pidyon Hekdeshos you need 3, that's against the Tana in the Braisa. Who is the Tana the Braisa? That's Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. You may recall that we had a brisa earlier on this daf, in which Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, in the case of Medidas Egla Rufa, requires a Kohen Gadol, he requires a Melech, maybe requires all 71 judges. Here's another statement of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov in a totally different context. Afilu tzinora shel hegdesh tzricha asara bnei adam livdosa. Now what does this mean? Our Mishnah says that in the case of Ekdeshos, if a person is Magdish, a movable object, then you need three people, but only three people, to assess the value of the metaltel. However, if it's a case of Karka, then we need 10, one of whom is a Kohen. So when we talk about Ekdeshos of Karka, as opposed to metaltel, we need 10. But if you're talking about metaltel, we need only 3. Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov says that even in the case of metaltel, we require 10. And the Gemara is going to defend the Pshita of Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov based on the fact that in the parasha in Vayikra Chav Zayin that we mentioned earlier, the word Kohen appears no less than 10 times. Now again, if the word Kohen appears 10 times, then what should be a logical conclusion? This tribunal of 10 should be made up of what? Of Kohen, exclusively of Kohen. So the Gemara is going to attack that in a minute. But whatever it is, the number 10 is certainly critical. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, if you look in the parasha that we're talking about, Vayikra Chav Zayin, what you'll see is that the context in which the Torah repeats the word Kohen 10 times is the context of Hegdesh. And nowhere in the parasha are we going to differentiate between Metaltelin and Karka. So if in Hegdeshos you want to be Machal or Bipod the Hegdeshos of Karka, everybody agrees that you require 10, the same law should be extended to apply to Metaltelin. He says, Afilu Tzinora Shal Hegdesh. Now what is Tzinora Shal Hegdesh? So you may find, I don't know, if you have Steinsaltz, you have Art Scroll, you'll look in your commentaries. Here it says Kein Mazleg. It looks like a little fork. And it's used in the process of weaving. So it's a weaving fork. And when they would weave strands of gold, they needed a very sensitive kind of instrument, and that was called in Aramaic a tzinora, and in Hebrew we call it a kli katan kein mazleg. It's like a mazleg. So I don't know if you have that translation, but if you do, that reflects Rashi. Tosus, on the other hand, says that we find when we learn the laws of Beis HaMikdash that one of the klisharis that they used in the Beis HaMikdash is called Sinora. Now nowhere do we find that weaving is part of the avoda that requires klisharis. So what is this Sinora that was used in the Beis HaMikdash? The Tosa says this kli was used in the avoda of Hadlokas Neros HaMenorah, because every day they had to light the menorah and they had to put in psilos are the wicks, and you needed a very sensitive vessel in order to set up these wicks, because otherwise, you know, the wicks get full after they burn, they're full of black stuff, and therefore you needed this kli, which the Gemara calls a tzinorah. And that's what we're talking about. But again, don't misunderstand us. This tzinora was not only used in the Beis HaMikdash, it was used for every consumer. You know, anybody who lit candles, especially in those days, they didn't have electricity. So that's what the tzinora is all about. There's a third interpretation. This is Rabbeinu Chananel. He says that tzinora is a certain kind of a fork, almost like a pitchfork, that's used in the Mizbeach, on the Mizbeach, when you had a varim, which are limbs of the animal that have to be burned totally on the Mizbeach, for example, the Korban Tamid or any other Korban Ola, so you had to sometimes turn the avarim on the Mizbeach upside down. You had to turn it the other way so that it would be totally burnt. and they used a kind of a little pitchfork, which is called a tzinora. Rabbeinu Hananel, on the other hand, interprets that the word tzinora is made up of two smaller words, which are atze nora, means these were pieces of wood that we used to be burnt, that used to keep the fire going on the mizbeach. So again, whereas Rashi talks about using a tzinora in the context of weaving, which has nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash, but all the other mefarshim, whether it's Tosfos, whether it's Rabbeinu Hananel, all the different interpretations, they all assume that this tzinora was somehow used in the Beis HaMikdash, whether it was used in the process of Hadlokas HaNer, or perhaps Hafichas Evrei Tomid Al Mizbeach, or maybe it was used for the Atzei Sreifa. Somehow tzinora is a vessel. But in any event, what's clear? According to all interpretations, tzinora is what we call metaltalin. It's a movable object. And if you dedicate this fork for Hegdesh, according to Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov, you require, for the purpose of pidyon, asara b'nei adam. Why? Because according to Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov, any pidyon Hegdesh, no matter what, whether it's metaltalin or karka, requires an assessment of 10 people. And the Gemara now defends Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Our Mishnah says in the case of metaltalin, all you need is 3. Amalei Rav Popol Abai, Bishleim, I understand very well, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Elazar ben Yaakov. Why? Because the Omar Kishmuel, the Omar Shmuel, Asara Kohanim, Ksuvim Beparsha. So here we have to have a Chumash, and we have to count the word Kohen 10 times. Let me just see if by chance there's a Sefer Vayikra here. There are a number of different chumashim, but the question is if... okay, we got almost everything but Vayikra. All right, Mitch, you know the Chumash Baal Peh, so...
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, you'll tell me the 10... Especially 10 times it says Kohen in the parasha. All right. Do we have a Chumash here? I should have brought in a Chumash. Now, please make a note of it that the parsha that we're about to read is divided up into 3 themes or 3 subjects. Okay, they're all, what connects all of them is that we're talking about Pidyon Hegdesh. But Pidyon Hegdesh divides up into 3 separate categories. One is called Erchin, the other is called Pidyon Behema, and the third is called Pidyon Karka. So let's see if we can find this. Thank you so much. Vayikra Chav Zayin. Okay. So now, the Torah begins this section with the case of Erchin. So Erchin is number 1 in terms of the sequence on the list. Daber b'nei Yisrael ki afli neder b'erkecha, etc., etc. And the Torah tells you, this is what's called a schum katsu, that if it's a zachar, if he's 20, he pays this much, chamishim shekel, and if it's an akeva, etc., etc. Now, after Erchin, we get to the second subject, which is going to be pidyon behema. Okay, that starts on the 9th verse in this chapter, behema shayakrev imenu karmel Hashem, etc., etc. And the Torah gives you the Isur Tmura, and the Isur Tmura applies if the behema is royal in Mizbeach, but im kol behema tmea, asher lo yakriv mimenu karban Hashem, so then we allow for a pidyon. So that's called pidyon behema. That's after Erchin. And finally, the last section in this chapter, im misteach uzoso yakdish ish l'Hashem, so now he's talking about being magdish a field, which is called karka. And then once again, he could be poda the field. Now let's see if we can count up the word Kohen as it appears over and over again in this parasha. Okay. Good. So now we start with Erkecha. That's the first subject of this parasha. It says, Imach hu mi Erkecha, ve'midol lifnei Kohen, 1, ve'richo so Kohen is 2, Al pi asher tasig yad hanodur yarichenu hakohen, 3. So again, I'm going to test you now. How many times does the word Kohen appear in Erkecha? Three. Now we go to Behema. And the Pasuk says the following, Ve'erich HaKohen, that's one. Ki Erkecha HaKohen is two. What did I skip? Just 1 second, there should be a third one. Im Hamir... Oh, sorry. The hemet as a behemah lifnei hakohen is one. The herech hakohen osa is two. Oh, and then it says ke'erchacha hakohen kein yeh is three. So now I'm going to test you. How many times does the word kohen appear in the section of pigeon behemah? Three. So we have three in pigeon erchacha, three in pigeon behema, and now we get to pigeon karka. So just guess before I count them how many times the word Kohen is going to appear in the parasha of Heged. Four, because the magic number we want to get to is 10. So let's see if we can find it. Four. It says v'chishev lo chishav lo akohenes akesef. That's one. Then it says v'haya. That's two. And then it says v'chishev lo, v'chishav lo hakohen es michzas ha'erkecha is three. And then where's the fourth? Did I skip one? Let's go over it again. V'chishev lo hakohen is one. Cherem LaKohen is two. Chishev LaKohen is three. So where's the fourth over here? There's a fourth one somewhere. I'm just not finding it. Secondly, where is it? So what are we up to? That's two. Chishlo Kohen is three. So, oh, I'm sorry. I skipped the pasuk. I started a little bit of the ishki akdishes beiso. Okay, that's already karka. Kodesh Lashem ve'erichah kohen. So that's the first of the four. So we have three coins in erkecha, three coins in behema, three and four coins in the case of what? Of karka. And what's common to all these three is we're talking about pigeon. Hekdeshos, whether it's Hekdeshos of Erkecha, Hekdeshos of Behema, that was originally designated to Mizbeach, but it became Tmeya, or the case of somebody who was Magdish's Karka. So Gemara says the following: Omar Shmuel, Asara Kohenim Ksuvim Beparsha. 10 times the Torah repeats the word Kohen in the Parsha of Pidyon Hekdesh. 3 in the case of Erkecha, 3 in the Behema, and 3 in Karka. Therefore, we sew them all together, we calculate together, and we assume that you need 10 people. Again, we have to know why they're not all Kohanim, we'll get to that later, in order to be implement a Shuma and appraise the value of the Hekdesh. Now, once we calculate all three categories together, and that's how we arrive at the number 10, that's the underlying assumption of Shmuel. In other words, we're not separating the first two from the third. The first two, well, let's say the second, you know what, let's focus on the second category, which is Behema. Behema is clearly Metaltalin. So if we're calculating the 10, then we should include within the 10, the requirement of 10, even Behema, which means even Metaltalin. And therefore, in the case of a Talton of Hegdesh, we understand the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov, that even in Sinora, even if it's metaltalin, we still need a tribunal of 10, a panel of 10 people, in order to assess the value for purposes of pidyon metaltalin. I'm talking about Hegdesh. El Rabbanan Shlosha Minolan. How do the Rabbanan know that it's sufficient if you have a tribunal of 3 members? Because let's take the parasha, for example, of Behema, which is clearly a case of metaltalin, and the word Kohen appears only 3 times in Behema. If that be the case, you're separating the various themes of this parasha, the sections, and you're breaking it down into individual, independent units. Nor then Karkos, which is the third of the 3 units, that Sivbu, how many times is the word Kohen? We counted it up 4 times. Is Tizge Basara to be sufficient? Ba'arba, that you have 4 members of the, because it only says Kohen 4 times. V'chitem Achinamin, if you'll say, yeah, we'll be consistent, is Alom Etnan. What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that Karkos, for Pidya Karkos, you need a Shuma of Tisha of the Kohen, which means 10. So you see that by definition we are integrating all together. All Kohanim together. We're not separating them, breaking them down into different subcategories and units. Hence, Karka requires 10, because if you add the 3 at the beginning in Erechin and the 3 in the middle of Behema to the 4 at the end of Karka, then you require 10. So we should apply the same logic to every single section of the parasha, because we're integrating and sewing them together as one entity, as one unit, and there's a general halakha of Pidyon Hekdeshos, that Pidyon Hekdeshos require 10. Elamai, maybe you're going to answer that Karka is unique, because where is Karka, Pidyon Karka, in the Seder HaParshios? It's at the very end. The Mishalmi Bu'asor. In other words, what Karka is going to do is going to take you from 6 to 10. That's called Mishalmi Bu'asor. It rounds it off, it completes the number to 10. So therefore we're going to say that the Torah, in the case of Karka, insofar as it rounds it off, means that Karka requires 10. So he says, if that be the case, Hekdeshos Demashavu Shisa Liboy Shita. Right, we had the parasha began with Erechin, and then it went on to Hekdesh of a Behema. Hekdesh of Behema is Mashlin the number 6, right, because you're building on what came before it. So what first came in the parasha was Erechin, now what comes after it is Metaltalin, and in the case of Metaltalin, Behema, we're going to require now 6, because 3 plus 3, and the Gemara ends with Kasha. Now there's a long discussion here about the difference between Kasha and Tiuvta, meaning Kasha means that there is an answer, it's not a great answer, but there is some sort of an answer, so B'li Neder will try to go through and see what would be the possible answer to this question. But before we get to that, there was something else that I wanted to mention. Oh. Rashi, it finds another word Kohen here, an 11th Kohen. The Pasuk says, La Kohen Tia Achuzoso. So Rashi wants to know, why isn't that included in the number of Kohanim? Says Rashi, Ein zeh nimna b'misfar Kohanim, why? Me'achar she'ein anu monim el b'mokum shenemar tevas Kohen linyan shuma. When the Torah mentions Kohen in the context of assessing the value of something, then the appraiser has to be a Kohen. As it says, V'aricho ha'Kohen, ki ercho ha'Kohen, it's v'chishev la'Kohen. All of these are calculating. In this pasuk, according to Yahuzoso, we're talking about the ownership of the Kohen. Now, what I mentioned to you earlier is that this panel of appraisers, according to Rashi Shita, is made up of Bekir, of experts in the field, because they're in the retail business, they're buyers and sellers, they'll know exactly how to evaluate. However, the Rishonim, Tosis, Rabbi Yonah, and others, they stand up and object to Rashi because the Gemara doesn't say Bekiyim, it says Lekuchos. Lekuchos means buyers. And therefore, Tosfos, leading the pack, and many other Rishonim are going to say that the tribunal is made up of three people who are bidding for the Hegdish, for the Peiros of Maaseh Sheni, etc. And therefore, by the process of bidding, you're going to get the best possible price that you could get on the market, because maybe one of the bidders is willing to pay more. And therefore, Hegdish is going to gain something, because you're going to give Hegdish this money and get back the object. Hegdish is now going to get a higher price. So we therefore want to do a Shuma through this auction house, because that's going to get you the best price. So both sides, if you had a choice, you were a businessman, you wanted to make profit, which would be more lucrative, more profitable, to sell on the market or to sell in auction? Did you ever think about that question? I always thought that in auction you can get a good deal, but the Gemara seems to assume no, that if you, the more people you have bidding for something, and those who came, they're interested, so they, you know, some, there's also psychology, you know, you want to get it, you know, you want to beat out the next guy. That's the competitive psychology. Okay, fine. Now, what did I want to add? Because that we discussed already. I wanted to just add something here that I found. He says, okay, if you're going to do the shuma based on the shuk, they have no vested interest in buying it, then hegdesh nifsad. And certainly in the case of Peiros Sher Kivu, no one's going to really give a great value to Peiros Sher Kivu. You know, I always say it's like buying a used car. You know, you can spend $25,000 on a car, and then the next day it's worth $18,000. You know, say it goes down significantly. So in Peiros Sher Kivu, you know, in the market price, you're really going to take a slash price. But if you have a closed intimate auction, then hopefully you'll jack up the price and Hegdesh benefits from it. Now, he says the following. B'sefer Binyan Shlomo, Tama. I'm not sure who the Binyan Shlomo is. I think he was a Jew from Vilna back in the time of the Gaon. I'm not sure. But anyway, so he asks the following. The Gemara says in Baba Basra that whenever you have a Shuma, whenever you appraise the value of something, and there are three people who are appraising them, Holchim Achar Ha'em Tzai. He says that there'll be someone who gives a very high price in his evaluation relative, someone will give a very low price, and then you have a middle. And the halacha, says the Gemara Baba Basra, is that the final determination, al pi din of the shuma, is the emtsai. Madua kan yeshleil chachar marbe b'mechir. According to the Tosfos, and those who agree with Tosfos, we're going to set up this auction, and Hegdesh is going to end up with the highest value. And that's going to cause a loss to the Bailam, because they're going to have to shell out more for the pigeon of this Hegdesh. So that's the kasha of the Binyan Shlomo. Now, according to Tosfos, the Gemara, you remember, vacillated about a case where the three individuals belong to one organization, right? Shloshim Atilim Tov Kisechim. According to Rashi, that means since we want to get a heterogeneous assessment, so it's very exciting because you have three different people belong to three different business enterprises. Each one is going to have a different experience, and he'll have a different assessment of what a value of a spoiled fruit is. But if you're talking according to Tosfos that these three lekuchos are bidders, he says, "If Yeshem Shloshim Bnei Adam Hashutofim Biskeim V'Ato Chovitz Kolechem Em Liknos Peiros Liatzmo," he says, "You're setting up an auction. Each person is buying it for himself. He's not buying it for the company. He's not a representative of the company. Einachinami, if he was representative of the company, then these three people are not going to outbid themselves. You know, the CEO of the company is going to fire them. but rather each person is buying it for himself. So who cares if they belong to the same company? So you suggest that maybe if they all belong to the same company and they have a certain, you know, close relationship, then maybe we should be afraid of kinunya. Yeah, I don't know the laws in auctions. There must be international laws about auctions that you can't make a kinunya. You know what I'm saying? Like, imagine if you and I want to bid, and you're very eager to get X that's being sold, and I'm very eager to get Y, so we make a kinunya. You know, I agree that I won't outbid you for X, and you agree that you won't outbid me for Y. I don't know. There must be laws about that. I don't know. Anybody know? Because this is a great idea, you know, get all the bidders together in a room and let's work this out, you know. And everyone's going to get something at the lowest price.
It's a type of collusion.
Collusion, right. Yeah. It's called kinunya in Hebrew, in Aramaic anyway. So he says that maybe in the case of Shutfim, they're entering into this auction house to auction and bid for spoiled fruits. Maybe they'll make up, you know, up front that, you know, they'll... Whoever yells out the lowest number, nobody's going to outbid them. And that's going to keep the mechir unusually low. And in such a case, maybe one of them will buy at that low bid the entire volume of spoiled fruits, and then they'll divvy it up. You know, each one of the other collusioners, you know, will agree to pay one third and get one third. He says, "Ein choshesh in lezeh." He doesn't think that we have to worry about such a thing. Why? May achash abaylim atzmo yochal afhu lifdoso b'mechir shem kovim ulefichach heim mailim es hadamim. I think what he means is that although we go through show and tell kind of thing, of an auction, but at the end of the day, it's the bailim themselves that have first rights to be poda. So there's less of a motivation for kinunya here, because who's going to gain by the kinunya? They won't gain anything by the kinunya. The bailim are going to say, look at this cheap price, this is great, I'm going to be poda my hegdesh at this low price. So there's not a motivation for kinunya. Lefichach, therefore, what's going to happen is if there's no kinunyan, hey, mailim bedomim, that within the context of this auction, they're going to jack up the price. Now, the Gemara quotes ish ushtei nashim, shtei nashav, heim shutfim biskeim. The Gemara thinks in the Hamamina that they all have one common joint bank account. Umikomakomim kol echad mehem chafetz liknos haperos liatzmo. Wow, this is interesting. The whole purpose of the tribunal of three, according to Tosis, is to have this auction and jack up the price. So I understand in the case of three people who belong to one company, okay, now they're buying it as an individual. Each individual, without representing his company, he wants to buy it for himself. So he's going to bid whatever he's going to bid. But in the case of a husband and two wives, why would the auction be meaningful at all? I mean, they're not going to try to jack up the price, you know, outdo the Baal, let's say. But he says, Yitachen, it's possible, Shemedubar b'isha kazu, Sheklal ena shutfa b'skeh shel baleh. I know that she's not financially dependent upon her husband. And therefore she, you know, she'll bid as an independent bidder for herself. Moesha's Rapapa, like we discussed yesterday. Now, Kosar Rabbeinu Yonah, she talking lo shafrashi sobishloch lekuchos, hainu shechafetzim liknos es haperos. Rabbeinu Yonah wants to insist that Rashi agrees that these three buyers, as the Gemara calls them, are buying the fruits for themselves. Not the way we thought that Rashi's saying that these are assessors. We're not interested in buying the fruits. They're going to just utilize, fall back on their experience in buying and selling, their expertise, and they're going to give you the right price for these fruits. Elishu Mosif Shitsachiu Lakucha Salem Sochrim Bekim Bishumishim Lokin Lo Toil Machirizuma Uma. Shemiakash Aina Mekirmis Erecha Mekach, Yitochin Shaaf Zesh Yitzias Amachira Gavamikulam, Adayin Aino no Sain Kifishavyam Hamiti Shalaperos. Wow. Rabbeinu Yonah wants to suggest that this concept of an auction, even according to Rashi, is not carte blanche. It's not just anarchy. It's not just structureless. You know, anybody might come in and give a high bid. Somehow, the highest bid has to be indicative of the true value, has to reflect the value of the fruits, not the value of some collector or some desperate person who needs fruit so badly. You know, he wants to make fruit juice, so he'll take spoiled fruits or something, and he's going to pay more. That doesn't really answer the question. It doesn't address the issue, what is the value of these fruits? So therefore, Rashi wants to make sure that these three bidders have expertise of the retailers, of those who are in business in buying and selling fruits. In that context, no expert is going to go beyond, you know, way beyond the market value of the fruits, because he knows that that's a silly thing to do, to outbid someone and give an exaggerated price when he could buy these fruits, you know, down the block through the exchange, you know, the market, and pay a lot less. So basically, Rabbi Yonah has a shita, which he identifies as Rashi shita, which is an integration, if you will, of both Rashi as we knew it before Rabbeinu Yonah and Tosfos. Tosfos says these three assessors are bidders in an auction. Rashi says these three bidders are experts in the market. And Rabbeinu Yonah is suggesting a new interpretation of Rashi, in which we piggyback both Rashi and Tosfos, and by integrating them we say the following: we need that these three be bidders, but we also need that at the same time to be experts, because otherwise the bidding might get out of hand. If these guys are not experts and they don't really have the finger on the pulse, they don't know what they could buy down the block, then it could be theoretically they'll throw out an exaggerated price, and that's not what the Torah wants. The Torah at the end of the day is trying to get a fair price for Hegdesh, but not something that's exaggerated. And therefore Rashi qualifies that these three buyers or bidders should at the same time be Bikiyim, they should be experts. Now, getting back to Pinyon Egdeshos, why is it that in the case of Karka, since Karka is at the end of the parasha, we calculate 10 Kohanim, and we piggyback Hegdesh on the 6 Kohanim that came before in the parasha, but in the case of Pidyon Hegdesh B'Metaltalin, which is reflected in the parasha of Pidyon Behemah Tmeah, we're not going to use the same logic, and we're going to piggyback the three that are written in the parasha of Behemah, Pidyon Behemah, on the three that are written in the parasha of Pidyon Erechin, and require 6. So Gemara says, Kash, Aval Ein Zeh Tyuvta. Tyuvta means Kusha She'ein Aleh Tshuva, there's no answer. Here, nitan liyashiv. Shelegavi Egdeshos, shenema bohem shlosha kohanim, ein mistaber lahosif alehem. It doesn't make sense in the case of Hegdesh to go beyond the number 3. And in fact, the Torah does say 3 in the case of Hegdesh. Why is it not logical? Because the number 3 is a very important number. It represents a bezdin, a complete bezdin. Why go beyond the number 3? V'odin, furthermore, she'im natzrich bahem shisha, if you require 6, yeh ha'bezdin shakul. That's an even number. Rabosai, what question should you be asking now? 10 is also an even number, last time I checked. V'od, and he says, furthermore, shumas metaltel yiduahi. When it comes to metaltalin, where we have halach of onah, you know, you can't undercharge, overcharge, there we know what the value is, more or less. You know, there may be a little bit of expertise that's necessary, but ein tzar kol kachar be'anoshim, we don't have to double the number of experts and gather together 6 experts. Aval Karka, where the Torah says for Kohanim. So you see already that the Torah set a precedent here and requires more than a Beis Din, right? Four is more than a Beis Din. Obviously, the assessment of the value of real estate is much more complicated, much more challenging endeavor, and therefore we are going to apply this principle, which is called Mashlame L'Asara, that the four Kohanim that are mentioned in the parasha of Pidyon Hekdeshos of Karka are Mashlim, the six that came before it. Be odd, and furthermore, Shumas HaKarka Eini Yidua Kol Kach. Right, not only is it indicated by the number four that we're not talking about a Beis Din of three, but beyond that, real estate is very difficult to appraise, and therefore it's logical that we should require 10. We still have the question, well, 10 is an even number. It's a Beis Din shakul. You could get a 5-5 decision. So I think, but we'll see it a little later on, that if there's a 5-5 take, you know, an equal decision amongst them, then what we'll do is we'll take the middle. So if, let's say, 5 say it's worth 10, and 5 say it's worth 12, so we'll settle on 11. Now we get to the main sugya for today. The Mishnah says, Erchin Metaltalin B'Shlosha. So the Gemara asks, my Erchin Metaltalin? That doesn't make any sense. Erchin means Erchi Olai. Erchi Olai means he has to pay his damim, and the Torah spells it out. It depends on his age, it depends on his gender. What does that have to do with metaltal? The Gemara is now going to embark upon a presentation of three different interpretations of Erchin HaMetaltal. Let's call them Roman numerals 1, 2, and 3. So Roman numeral number 1, Omer Avgido Omer Rav, Be Omer, the man declared, or pledged, if you will, Erech Kli Ze Olai. The value of this particular utensil is obligatory on me. The Omer Avgido Omer Rav, here you want to turn to Daf Tezvav and Aleph, Ha Omer Erech Kli Ze Olai, Nosein Domo. He's got to give the value of the kli. Now, wait a second. How can you say erech kli olav? The word erech is uniquely designated, or shall I say exclusively designated, for the erech of a person. Now you're saying the erech of a kli. Why is that a binding pledge? You know, when a person takes a pledge, like erech, and that's called haflas peh. Haflas peh means that what you express and enunciate with your mouth, that generates a chiyuv. That's obligatory. That's valid. But there's no such thing as erech kli ze olai. So the Gemara answers, my taima, why is this considered a valid pledge? L'chor, it's gibberish when he says erech kli ze olai. Because Adam Yodea She'ein Erech L'Kli. There's no such thing as Erechin on a Kli. The parasha of Erechin is referring to human beings. When you say Erechi Olai or Erech Ploni Olai, doesn't apply to Kli. But we have another principle. And this principle is up front, it's high profile, in all of Hafla, meaning in all of pledges. It might even apply in some cases to Dini Mominos, which a person makes a statement. And it certainly applies to Erechin, and that's called Ein Adam Motzi Dvarim B'Teilim Mipiv. A person doesn't say something that is ridiculous, that he knows full well has no halachic binding. It's not halachically binding. And therefore, when a person says something which we know by definition is impossible, it's invalid, then we have to reinterpret what he said. That's called Ein Adam Motzi Dvarim B'Teilim Mipiv. So, for example, the Gemara is going to have a whole sugya where a man gives money to a woman for the marriage, and then after that, she accepts the money, he gives money to her sister. So Gemara says a person knows that you can't marry two sisters, but he gave it as a matanah. That's even though it was in the context of marriage, and we would have assumed that he wanted to marry his wife's sister. No, we don't assume so. We have to reinterpret his words and take them out of context, and he's giving her a gift. Not take this money for marriage, but take this money for a gift. I mean, there are many, many different examples of this. Like a person uses a lashon of ola for a shlomim, or vice versa. So we have to reinterpret his words, because ain on the motzi dvar b'teilu mipiv. We give a human being who's taking a pledge a certain element of intelligence, and we grant him that he's smarter than to say something that's impossible. So what then does a man mean? How can we reinterpret a man who says erech kli ze olai when there ain't such a thing? The gomar v'omar l'shum damin. In other words, his gomar means his decision, his mind, was to obligate himself to give hegdesh dmei hakli, the value of a kli. That's called l'shum damin. L'shum means to evaluate, damin the monetary value of that kli. So basically in this case, we're talking about someone who took a pledge to give a sum of money to Hegdesh. But instead of telling us exactly what that sum is, he said, Metaltel. He said, Erech Kli Zelai. The value of the Kli is what I pledge to the courts. I'm talking to the Hegdesh, to the Gizbar. So imagine, Rabosai, if let's say, you know, they're auctioning off Aliyas and Shul. And I make a pledge to give a certain object which everybody knows I can't give. Let's say I pledge a Sefer Torah. I don't own a Sefer Torah. So it means we reinterpret the words that he said. He wants to give, and he pledges the value of the Sefer Torah. Here too, how can a person say Erech Kli Ze Olai? It means he's pledging, he's committing himself to give to Hegdesh the value of that Kli. Umishum Hachi No Sein Damav. And therefore we need three people to evaluate the market price for that kli, and that's the amount of money that he has to give to Hegdesh. So it comes out, Rabosai, according to this interpretation, we're not talking about a case where he was magdish a kli. That certainly could not come under erchin in any sense. But rather he was magdish a certain price, a certain schum. How do you say schum in English? A sum. He was magdish a certain sum, but instead of spelling out exactly what sum he obligates, he used this kli, and he says, the erech, the value of the kli, all I am accepting part of myself and obligating myself to give to Hegdesh. How much is the kli worth? For that we need a supervisory board made up of three experts. So Gemara is not happy with this. That doesn't fit into the language of the Mishnah. Hi, the Mishnah says, Arochin HaMetaltelin, which means that there's something called Erchin that applies to Metaltelin. You're denying the whole thing. You're not saying that there's an Erchin which always refers to a person, and then somehow fit in the word metaltel, and you're saying no. It means that he pledges the value of metaltel, but that's not erech. It should have said, according to your interpretation, erechin shel metaltel, the value of metaltel. But erechin metaltel means that there's an erechin here. Erechin, by definition, is a person who says erechi olai or erech ploni olai. It's not a case of someone who's pledging metaltelin. So the Gemara says, Tni erchin shel metaltelin. We have to add the word shel over here. It's not erchin metaltelin, but erchin shel metaltelin, which means that he pledged an erech, a certain sum, but instead of telling us exactly what the sum is, it was shel metaltelin, the value of the sum of a metaltelin. So that's Roman numeral number one. Now, we don't have time to go through the other two interpretations. We're going to have an interpretation here of Rav Chisda in the name of Rav Avimi. And that has to do with hatfasa. Now, the person actually said erchi a lie, because the Gemara now wants to make sure it's erchin, and he has to pay his value. But he takes metaltalin and he gives it to Bezdin, to the Gizbar, and he says, let this be payment for my erchin. So that's interesting. He started with erchin, but instead of paying the erchin, his pledge, with cash, with liquid assets, and write out a check, instead he offers metaltalin. The Gemara's not going to be happy with that either. And again, it's going to force the Gemara to change the lashon of the Mishnah until we get to Rabbi Avo, and that's a case of erchi olai, as we'll soon see. So, Mitzchem, tomorrow we'll finish up this part of the sugya, and then we'll try to understand this tribunal, this panel that's made up of 10 people, one of whom is a Kohen. That's what we're going to talk about in Mitzchem tomorrow. Okay, then. Now, if anyone is interested in an Iyun Shir,